No, I was filling up my tank just the other day, and I started thinking, how do gas stations actually make money?
Right. It seems so straightforward.
Yeah, just pump and go. But the deep dive we did on Murphy USA, well, it revealed this completely unexpected strategic game being played underneath. It's actually way more complex and honestly pretty fascinating than it appears on the surface. Welcome to the deep dive. This is the show where we take a stack of dense sources today. It's a comprehensive investment research analysis, and we really pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge, the key
Yeah,
insights.
basically giving you a shortcut to being well informed without, getting buried in all the details.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're diving deep into Murphy USA. The ticker symbol is MUSA.
MUSA.
You've almost certainly seen their fuel stations, especially if you're ever near a Walmart. They're pretty much ubiquitous in those parking
Oh
lots.
yeah, they're everywhere.
But there's so much more to this company than just, cheap gas. This deep dive gives us this incredible peek behind the curtain of their entire business model and its surprising evolution.
Well, what's fascinating here, I think, is that we're going way beyond just the gas pump itself. We're really looking at their entire strategic evolution. From the nuanced ways they actually make their money, to the sort of colossal industry shift they're trying to navigate right now. So our mission today really is to understand not just what Murphy USA does, but why their business model is designed the way it is. What are their core strengths really? And maybe most critically, what major challenges are they confronting for the long run? By the end of this deep dive, you'll have a much clearer, almost like an X-ray vision of how a company like MUSA operates and importantly adapts in what's a constantly dynamic market.
Absolutely. And to really get them, we need to start at the foundation. What exactly is Murphy USA?
Good question.
At its core, it's positioned as a low-price, high-volume retailer, selling motor fuel, yes, but also convenience merchandise.
That combination is key.
Think about that combination. They lure you in with competitive fuel prices, right? And then bam, there's an entire convenience store waiting for you. Their defining strength, the thing that really makes them unique, is this long-standing, profoundly strategic relationship with Walmart.
Can't overstate that one.
No, this partnership is what consistently drives just massive customer traffic to their locations. Our sources straight up call it a significant and durable competitive advantage.
It really is.
But here's the key theme, the thread we'll keep pulling on today. This company is in the middle of a massive strategic evolution.
A real pivot.
Yeah, moving decisively from that kind of old school fuel-centric, often just a kiosk model,
There's a little booth.
to a more robust convenience offering with larger, more profitable store formats. It's not just a minor tweak, it's like a fundamental reimagining of who they want to be.
And that shift you just described, it's not just crucial, well, it feels almost existential for them. And you really understand why when you dissect their revenue streams. They truly have two distinct faces, almost like two separate businesses running under one roof. You've got petroleum product sales and merchandise sales. Now, on the surface, petroleum, the gas sales, that dominates.
That's what you see first.
Exactly. In 2023, it accounted for nearly 80%, 79.4% to be exact, of their total operating revenues. That's a staggering $17.1 billion. So it's the primary engine for customer traffic. It's the top-line revenue driver. It's the magnet that gets you onto their lot in the first place.
Okay, so that's a bulk of the money coming in the door.
It looks like it. However, and this is the critical distinction, it's a really high-volume business paired with extremely thin margins. We're talking about approximately a 6.9% gross margin in 2023.
6.9%, that's
Right,
tiny.
it is. Think of it like this. It's almost like selling a dollar bill for, 99 cents, maybe 99 and a half cents. You move a massive quantity, but you're barely making a fraction of a penny on each unit, figuratively speaking. So while fuel gets people to the pump, its profitability depends entirely on just sheer volume and the cents per gallon, the CPG, they can manage to squeeze out of each sale.
CPG, cents per gallon. Got it.
And what's more, this revenue stream is incredibly sensitive to global commodity price fluctuations. Oil prices go up and down.
Completely out of their control.
Pretty much. For instance, their total operating revenues actually decreased from $23.4 billion in 2022 down to $21.5 billion in 2023.
Okay, so they sold less.
No, that's the twist. That wasn't because they sold less gas. Paradoxically, they actually sold more volume.
How's that work?
The decrease was purely due to lower average gas prices across the board. So this just illustrates how much that top-line revenue figure can dance to the tune of the global oil markets, almost irrespective of their actual operational performance day-to-day.
That's a perfect illustration, yeah. It shows why just looking at total revenue can be so misleading sometimes. You might assume a company selling billions in gas is incredibly profitable on every gallon.
But it's often not the case.
So if fuel is just the traffic driver, the magnet with these razor-thin margins, what's making the real money? Where's the actual profit engine?
Okay, that brings us neatly to merchandise sales. This is, without a doubt, the company's profit engine.
Inside the store.
Inside the store. While it contributed only about 19% of their total revenue in 2023, roughly $4.1 billion.
Still a big number, but much smaller than fuel.
Much smaller fraction, yeah. But it generated a significantly healthier gross margin of 19.7%. Almost 20%.
Okay, that's a big difference from 6.9%.
Huge difference. This segment is absolutely critical because the cash flow generates helps to cover a really substantial portion of the store's core operating expenses.
Like rent, utilities, staff?
Exactly.
Hmm.
Imagine a regular convenience store. If your merchandise sales, your sodas, your snacks, your coffee, if those sales are strong, you don't need to make as much profit on every single gallon of gas just to cover your basic costs.
Right. It gives them wiggle room.
It gives Murphy USA a lot more strategic flexibility in their fuel pricing. It allows them to remain highly competitive at the pump, sometimes the lowest price leader, even when fuel margins across the industry are getting squeezed.
So they can afford to sell cheaper gas because the Cokes and chips are paying the light bill.
That's a pretty good way to put it, yeah. The in-store sales are essentially subsidizing the operation, allowing that aggressive fuel pricing.
And beyond those two main categories, the fuel and the merchandise, they have this other bucket, right? Other operating revenues.
They do, yeah. In 2023, that was around $335 million.
Okay.
This can include things like, you know, basic lottery commissions, which are pretty standard. But what really jumped out in the sources was their income from something called renewable identification numbers, RINs.
RINs. What on earth are those?
Okay, think of RINs like sort of. Like a carbon credit or maybe a green badge, specifically for gasoline.
Huh.
If you blend renewable fuels, like ethanol, into your gasoline supply, the government essentially gives you these credits, these RINs. You earn them.
Okay, so it's an incentive to use renewables.
Exactly. And here's the wild part.
Yeah.
The value of these RINs can swing wildly. It depends on supply, demand, complex regulatory policies.
So it's like its own little market.
It absolutely is. It makes them this unpredictable, but sometimes surprisingly large source of extra cash for Murphy USA. It's almost like they're playing the carbon credit market alongside selling Twinkies and gas.
Yeah.
Adds a whole other layer of complexity to their revenue picture.
Wow. Okay, so that's the money side.
Indeed. And those evolving revenue streams are directly tied, hand in glove, with their evolving store strategy.
Makes sense.
As of the end of 2023, Murphy USA operated 1,733 stores across 27 states.
Okay, decent footprint.
Yeah, good size.
Yeah.
The vast majority, 1,577, are the traditional Murphy-branded stores you see. And then they have those 156 QuickChek stores, which, as we'll keep saying, are a major part of this strategic pivot they're making.
Yeah, the acquisition.
Yeah. Now, their foundational location strategy, as you highlighted earlier, is laser-focused on close proximity to Walmart supercenters.
Right there in the parking lot, usually.
Usually. This isn't accidental. It's a very deliberate choice.
Mm-hmm.
It powerfully leverages Walmart's just immense customer traffic. They are perfectly positioned to capture that value-conscious consumer demographic that shops at Walmart.
The bargain hunters.
Pretty much. And crucially, this significantly lowers Murphy USA's customer acquisition costs. They get this constant stream of potential customers walking or driving right past their door without spending much, if anything, on traditional advertising or big promotions to lure them in.
Smart. Free traffic, essentially.
Pretty close to it. But here's where that strategic evolution we keep mentioning really takes physical shape. They're very deliberately, very actively transforming their store formats.
Okay, how so?
Think back to 2013. That's when Murphy USA spun off from its parent company, Mercy Oil. Back then, nearly 70% of their entire network were those small, fuel-focused kiosks you often see. Just a little booth, maybe some cigarettes and drinks.
Right, barely a store.
Exactly. Fast forward to the end of 2023, and that number, the percentage of kiosks, was down to approximately 40%.
Wow, that's a big shift in a decade.
It's a huge shift. They are actively shrinking the percentage of kiosk-only stores. And they're achieving this mainly through two primary initiatives.
Okay.
First, their new store builds. When they build a new location from scratch, it's increasingly focused on larger formats, like the 1,400-square-foot Murphy USA stores, mm-hmm. or even bigger, the 2,800-square-foot Murphy Express locations.
So significantly bigger than a kiosk.
Oh, massively bigger. These larger footprints are absolutely necessary if they want to offer a wider, more diverse array of those higher-margin merchandise items we talked about, especially fresh food.
Yeah, you can't make pizza in a kiosk.
Exactly. A small kiosk simply doesn't have the space, the equipment, or the layout for a robust food service program.
So they're literally building their way into more profitable sales,
yeah.
investing heavily in just physical transformation.
That's exactly it. And the second key initiative is their Raise and Rebuild program.
Raise and Rebuild sounds dramatic.
It kind of is. But it's a really clever, very capital-efficient way for them to upgrade existing high-traffic real estate. They're taking those older, sometimes end-of-life kiosks.
The ones looking a bit tired.
Yeah, those ones. Tearing them down completely and then replacing them on the same spot with modern, larger, 1,400-square-foot stores. The company even aimed to complete up to 40 of these projects just in 2024.
40 in 1 year. That's aggressive.
It's very aggressive. It's about taking an already profitable, well-located site, remember, often near a Walmart,
yeah.
and making it even more profitable by dramatically expanding its merchandise potential and, frankly, improving the whole customer experience.
Makes sense. Leverage the good spot. Upgrade the offering.
Precisely. And then, layered on top of that organic change, was that truly pivotal strategic move. The 2021 acquisition of QuickChek.
Right. We mentioned them. What's different about QuickChek stores?
Well, these aren't just bigger stores. They're significantly larger formats. They average over 5,400 square feet.
Whoa, that's huge for a convenience store.
It really is.
Yeah.
And they are specifically, deliberately designed around a comprehensive fresh food and beverage program. Think made-to-order sandwiches, salads, soups, coffee bars.
Like a mini restaurant attached to a gas station?
Kinda, yeah. This acquisition wasn't just about adding 156 stores to their account. It was a major signal of their intent to fundamentally transform their business mix. It gave them instant scale and, crucially, instant expertise in food service, a high-margin category where they were lagging.
So they basically bought the know-how along with the stores.
Exactly. They bought the blueprint. All of this aggressive shift in store formats, the raise and rebuilds, the QuickChek acquisition, it's fundamental to the company's future. It builds the physical capacity, the actual square footage, to dramatically diversify its merchandise mix.
Get away from just smokes and cokes.
Precisely. And in doing so, significantly reduce its reliance on those thin margin fuel sales for overall profitability. It's about becoming less dependent on gas price swings and shifting towards the much more profitable and arguably more stable convenience store business model. It's a bold gamble, really, to redefine their core identity.
That makes perfect sense. And speaking of foundational aspects, we absolutely have to talk more about that Walmart partnership. You can't really discuss Murphy USA without it.
No, it's impossible.
The sources literally call it the cornerstone of Murphy USA's business model and its most defining competitive characteristic. It's truly symbiotic. As we said, a majority of their stores are right there on Walmart parking lots. It's a direct legacy of Murphy USA spinning off from Murphy Oil over a decade ago now.
Yeah, they were essentially Walmart's gas station provider initially.
Pretty much. And these aren't casual handshake deals either. They're governed by long-term agreements. While Murphy USA owns the land for many of its sites, quite a few are on ground leases with Walmart. And some are even on properties where both the land and the building are leased. So there's a mix of ownership structures.
Interesting. So they don't own everything.
No, not all of it. The primary, undeniable benefit, as you mentioned before, is that consistent, high volume of customer traffic generated by Walmart's sheer retail dominance.
It's like an anchor tenant, but for traffic.
Exactly. It gives Murphy USA this structural cost advantage because they don't have to work as hard or spend as much money to attract customers to their locations compared to a standalone gas station on a random corner. They just piggyback on Walmart's existing draw.
Saves a lot on marketing and advertising, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. But, and this is really crucial, it's also a classic double-edged sword.
The downside.
Yes. This deep integration, this reliance, also represents their single most significant concentration risk.
Meaning too many eggs in one basket.
Precisely. Think about it. Any material change in that strategic relationship, what if Walmart decides to alter its fuel strategy? Maybe they partner with a different fuel retailer.
Ouch.
Or what if Walmart decides to develop its own robust fuel offering to compete directly? or even just a significant sustained decline in foot traffic to Walmart's physical supercenters as e-commerce continues to gobble up retail.
Yeah, any of those could be a major blow.
A major blow. Any of those scenarios could have a disproportionately negative impact on Murphy USA's core traffic engine, potentially quite suddenly. It's truly a critical factor you have to consider when looking at this company. And it likely puts a bit of a ceiling, you know, on how the market values the company compared to peers who don't have that kind of dependency. Because a huge chunk of their business is, in a very real sense, tied to another company's strategy and success.
Indeed. That dependency is probably the number one risk factor analysts point to. Mm-hmm. And underpinning all of this, including how they manage that Walmart relationship and how they execute these store changes, is their relentless focus on operational efficiency.
Keeping costs down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A core tenet, maybe the core tenet of Murphy USA's strategy, is to sustain cost leadership position. They are obsessed with being the low-cost operator.
How do they actually achieve that?
It's through a combination of things. A highly efficient, very lean operating model. Their standardized stores, especially the older, smaller footprint ones, historically required lower capital expenditures, lower CapEx to build.
Cheaper to put up.
Yep. And they come with lower ongoing maintenance and utility costs compared to, say, the sprawling travel center formats some competitors run. The sources explicitly highlight that MUSA operates at a fraction of the average monthly operating costs of top quartile industry performers.
A fraction. That's a huge claim.
It is. But it suggests they run a very tight ship. That's not just a minor advantage. It's a fundamental competitive moat. It allows them to absorb costs or price aggressively when needed. And this efficiency, this low-cost structure, directly translates into something they call a low fuel break-even. This is a really important metric to grasp for them.
Fuel break-even, explain that.
Okay, think of it like this. It's the tiny little bit of profit, measured in cents per gallon of gas, that they need to make on fuel after they've already counted all the profit they made from their merchandise sales inside the store.
Okay.
Just to cover all their basic store-level cash operating costs, the rent, the lights, the payroll we mentioned.
So how much do they need to make on gas after the Cokes and chips profit?
Exactly. And Murphy USA's consistently low break-even point means they can offer highly competitive fuel pricing, often the lowest price in their immediate market, while still maintaining overall store profitability.
I see. So even if they're only making a penny or two per gallon profit on gas itself, they're still okay because the store is covering most costs.
Precisely. It provides this crucial buffer during periods of intense margin compression or fierce price wars. It allows them to weather industry downturns better than less efficient operators who might actually be losing money on every gallon if wholesale prices spike or street prices drop too low.
So it builds resilience.
Absolutely. And this efficiency focus extends right into their supply chain as well. They have some distinctive capabilities in fuel supply. This includes actual ownership of some distribution terminals and securing advantage supply agreements.
So they control more of the process.
You control more of it, yeah. This gives them greater control over their fuel supply, the reliability of it, and critically, the cost of it. It allows them, as the source puts it, to create advantage from market volatility.
Mm.
By effectively managing how they procure and distribute fuel, they can often secure the product at a lower cost than competitors.
Which feeds right back into their low prices.
Exactly. It further reinforces that low price value proposition at the pump. It's all about meticulously shaving pennies or fractions of pennies off every single part of the operation to maintain that crucial competitive edge.
So they built this very lean, very efficient machine, heavily reliant on Walmart traffic, but increasingly trying to make money inside the store.
That's a good summary.
Now let's zoom out a bit. Let's look at the broader industry they operate within. We're talking about the U.S. convenience and fuel retailing industry, and it's just vast and incredibly fragmented.
Huge market.
Yeah. In 2023, total industry sales hit nearly $860 billion. That's almost $1 trillion.
Wow.
And what's truly interesting, something you might not realize when you pull in for gas, is just how many small players dominate the landscape. Of the more than 152,000 convenience stores counted in the U.S. in 2023.
Oh, okay.
A staggering 63%, almost two-thirds, were single-store operators.
Wow, really? So mostly mom-and-pop shops?
That's right. Independent mom-and-pop shops make up the vast, vast majority of locations.
That's a really notable contrast to a lot of other retail sectors we look at, isn't it?
Okay.
Where you're seeing massive consolidation, big chains dominating, store counts shrinking.
Exactly. But the convenience store industry, it actually grew by 1.5% in store count in 2023. That was its second consecutive year of growth.
So it's expanding while others shrink.
Right. This expansion, happening while established channels like drugstores and even supermarkets are actually shrinking their physical footprints, it really highlights the enduring, maybe even growing, consumer demand for convenience. People are increasingly seeking quick, accessible solutions for their everyday needs, gas, coffee, snacks, whatever.
Makes sense. Life feels busier.
It does. And for companies like Murphy USA, this extreme fragmentation creates, well, a fertile environment for consolidation.
Lots of potential targets.
Tons of them. There's plenty of room for larger, more sophisticated operators like MUSA, Circle K, Casey's to gain market share. They can do it organically by building new, better stores that outcompete the independents, or through strategic acquisitions of those smaller independent chains who often lack the capital, the scale, or maybe the expertise to compete effectively on fuel pricing, merchandise variety, or technology. It's an industry that seems ripe for the picking by these well-capitalized players.
A classic roll-up opportunity in industry jargon.
Exactly. And this industry structure leads us to something truly fascinating, something that completely changes how you should think about this business. The sources call it the great profit shift.
Okay. Sounds important.
It is. It highlights this critical divergence, the split between where the revenue comes from and, much more importantly, where the profit actually comes from in this industry.
Revenue versus profit. Got it.
For example, in 2023, across the entire industry, fuel sales accounted for over two-thirds, 67.3% of total revenue.
Okay. So the majority of sales dollars are from gas.
You'd naturally think that means fuel drives the majority of the profit too, right?
Seems logical.
But guess what? Fuel sales only generated about 38.6%, just over one-third of the total industry profits in 2023.
Whoa. So two-thirds of the revenue, but only about one-third of the profit? That's a massive gap. That's a huge disconnect, isn't it? And it's really the core insight you need to understand about this entire industry today. Conversely, look at in-store sales, the merchandise. While it represented just under one-third, about 32.7%, of total industry revenue in 2023.
Okay, the smaller slice of revenue.
It generated a commanding 61.4% of the industry's profits.
Wow, so the minority of revenue drives the majority of profit.
Overwhelmingly. This truly underscores the strategic imperative, the absolute necessity for every single player in this industry to enhance their in-store offerings. The days of just being a simple gas station are, frankly, fading fast.
You have to sell stuff inside.
You have to sell stuff inside, and you have to sell the right stuff. And within merchandise, one category has emerged as the single most important driver of growth and profitability.
Food service.
Food service. Okay, what does that include? This includes things like prepared food things, hot dogs, pizza slices, maybe roller grill items, commissary items, maybe prepackaged sandwiches, and also dispensed beverages, coffee, fountain sodas, slushies.
The higher margin convenience items.
Exactly. In 2023, food service was about 27% of total in-store sales across the industry. But, and here's the kicker, it contributed an outsized 37.3% of in-store profits.
So again, punching way above its weight in profitability.
Massively. And the margins in food service are just, well, staggering compared to other categories.
It's staggering!
Okay, get this. Overall food service margins averaged over 51% in 2023.
51%?
Yeah. And prepared food, specifically the pizza, the sandwiches boasted gross margins of nearly 56%.
Wow.
Now put that in perspective. Compared to legacy categories like cigarettes, which used to be a huge profit driver for convenience stores, cigarettes typically have margins down around 15%, maybe slightly higher.
Okay, so 56% versus 15%, that's night and day.
It's a completely different business, profit-wise. So this massive industry-wide profit shift towards food service has profound implications for Murphy USA. Remember their numbers. Their reported total merchandise margin was 19.7% in 2023.
Right, much lower than the food service margins.
Exactly. While decent, it's well below the levels achieved by competitors like Casey's, who have a much more developed food service offering. This difference is largely due to MUSA's historical concentration in that lower margin tobacco category.
So they sell a lot of cigarettes, which drags down their average margin.
That's a big part of it. And this margin differential directly illuminates the strategic rationale, the why, behind the QuickChek acquisition and their aggressive shift to larger store formats. It's not just about generic growth. It's very specifically about rebalancing the company's merchandise mix.
Getting more of that high margin food?
Yes. Aligning themselves with the industry's most powerful value creation trend, which is food service. the success of this transformation, this pivot, is absolutely central to their long-term viability and their ability to close the profit gap with competitors. They're basically trying to catch up to where the real profits are being made in the industry today.
That makes their competitive landscape even more fascinating then. Because historically, like we said, they competed almost purely on offering low-price fuel, often as just the convenient gas station right there at Walmart.
That was their niche?
Yeah. But now, as they evolve and they actively chase those higher merchandise margins, especially in food, they're stepping into different competitive rings. They're going head-to-head with much more established players in the broader convenience store space.
Different ballgame.
Totally. Let's quickly look at who they're really up against now. First, there's the giant Alimentation Couche-Tard.
Couche-Tard, yeah.
Most people in the U.S. know them by their flagship brand, Circle K.
Right, Circle K everywhere.
They're a global powerhouse, operating something like 16,700 stores worldwide. They're known for being very aggressive with mergers and acquisitions, constantly buying smaller chains, and they have this relentless drive for operational efficiency. They take a very balanced approach, focusing heavily on both fuel and convenience.
A major, sophisticated competitor.
Definitely. Then you have Casey's General Stores, ticker symbol K-E-S-Y.
Casey's, the pizza guys.
Exactly. As of April 2024, they had over 2,600 stores. And they have a very differentiated, almost niche strategy compared to Circle K or MUSA. They focus heavily on smaller rural communities.
Right, not usually in the big cities.
No. About 72% of their stores are in markets with populations under 20,000 people. And as you said, Casey's is practically synonymous with prepared foods, especially their famous pizza. That's a huge driver of their significantly higher merchandise margins compared to MUSA.
They built their brand around food.
They really did. And finally, you've got 7-Eleven, largest by sheer store count globally, often very franchise heavy. Their focus is typically very strong on pure in-store convenience. Slurpees, snacks, quick items. Many of their locations don't even have fuel pumps.
So more of a pure convenience play.
Right. So the key takeaway here is that as MUSA expands its in-store offering, particularly food service, they are increasingly competing not just on having the cheapest gas, but also on the quality, the variety, and the value of their merchandise and food. And that puts them in much more direct competition with the likes of Casey's and Circle K, who, frankly, have a massive head start in those higher margin areas.
And that strategic pivot, that shift in competition, is perfectly encapsulated when you look at the peer comparison matrix the sources provide for fiscal year 2023. It really tells the story in numbers.
Okay, lay it on us. What does the data show?
All right, let's pull out some key comparative data points to really underscore this. Fiscal year 2023. First, Murphy USA. They had 1,733 stores. A staggering 79.4% of its revenue came from fuel, just 19.0% from merchandise. Mm. And critically, its merchandise gross margin was only 19.7%.
Okay. Heavily fuel-dependent, low merchandise margin.
Exactly. Now, compare that to Casey's General Stores. They had 2,658 stores. Their fuel revenue was significantly lower, only 63.38%, while merchandise revenue was a substantial 34.9% of their total.
Much more balanced towards merchandise.
Much more balanced. And their merchandise gross margin, a remarkable 41.0%.
41%. That's more than double Murphy USA.
More than double. That's the power of their food focus. And then look at that. Alimentation Couche-Tard, Circle K. Operating globally, over 14,500 stores. Their fuel revenue was 73.7%, still high, but lower than MUSA's. Merchandise revenue was 25.3%, and their merchandise gross margin was 34.8%.
Okay, so Couche-Tard is somewhere in the middle on margins, but still way ahead of Murphy USA.
Exactly. Way ahead. The stark difference, particularly that merchandise gross margin number, is the real takeaway here. It's the aha moment. Casey's 31% versus Murphy USA's 19.7% for the exact same year. It highlights precisely why Murphy USA is making this aggressive, arguably necessary strategic pivot towards convenience and food service.
They have to close that gap.
They absolutely have to. This isn't just about finding new growth avenues. It's about fundamentally rebalancing their business model. They are actively, deliberately working to capture more of that higher margin in-store profit, to diversify their earnings, reduce their reliance on volatile fuel margins, and ultimately close that significant profitability gap with their more advanced competitors. It's a chase, really, a chase to where the profits have shifted in this industry.
That comparison truly lays it bare. It shows just how far they still have to go in that strategic pivot, but also why it's so critical. Okay, now let's dig into their financial performance more broadly, and especially the challenges they faced. How have they navigated the recent economic turbulence? First off, as we touched on, looking at their top-line revenue can actually be a bit misleading, can't it? Because it's so heavily influenced by those volatile commodity prices.
Absolutely. That 2022 to 2023 example is perfect.
Yeah, their total operating revenues were $23.4 billion in 2022, but then they dropped to $21.5 billion in 2023, even though, as you said, they sold more fuel volume.
Uh-huh.
That decrease was purely because the average retail price of gasoline happened to be lower year over year.
Exactly. Fluctuations completely unrelated to their store operations. That's precisely why the more insightful view, the better way to gauge their fundamental health, is to look at their total gross profit.
Okay. Profit after the cost of goods sold.
Right. And this metric, total gross profit, has shown a strong and remarkably consistent upward trajectory over the years, indicating fundamental strength in the business. It grew from approximately $1.1 billion back in 2014 to nearly $2.0 billion in 2023.
So nearly doubled in about 9 years. That's solid growth.
It's very solid. Yeah, and this robust growth in gross profit has been driven primarily by two key factors we've already discussed. First, the steady and reliable expansion of that higher margin merchandise business. As they sell more inside the store, it consistently adds more high quality earnings.
Okay.
And second, there seems to have been a structural increase in retail fuel margins across the industry, particularly in the period following the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Margins just seem higher now than they used to be.
Interesting. Why is that?
Well, part of it might be competitors struggling with costs, allowing efficient players like MUSA to capture more margin. We'll touch on that more. But this expansion in gross profit, combined with their disciplined cost management we talked about.
Their low operating costs.
Right. It has led to a significant improvement in their overall profitability. The key measure here is adjusted EBITDA.
EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Basically, cash flow from operations.
Exactly. It tells you how much cash the core business is generating before things like interest payments or non-cash accounting charges. And MUSA's adjusted EBITDA has more than doubled in just a few years, increasing from $422.6 million in 2019 to $1,058.5 million, over $1 billion in 2023.
Wow, that's impressive growth and underlying profitability.
It really is. This robust growth, even with fluctuating top-line revenue, points to an increasing resilience in their business model and their ability to generate substantial, consistent cash flow. They're building a much more financially robust company underneath the surface volatility.
And it's not just about profit from existing stores. It's also about growing their physical footprint, but doing it efficiently and strategically.
Right. Growth is key, too.
They have a long history of disciplined organic growth, haven't they? Typically adding maybe 20 to 40 new stores each year.
Yeah, a steady pace.
But now the sources say they plan to accelerate that pace, targeting up to 50 new stores per year. That signals increased confidence in their growth model and the returns they're getting.
Definitely a sign of optimism.
And this organic growth, building stores from scratch, was significantly augmented, jump-started almost, by that 2021 acquisition of the 156 Quick Check stores.
Right, the food service specialists.
Which, as we mentioned, brought in those crucial food service capabilities, giving them an instant platform and know-how in that vital high-margin category.
What's truly impressive, though, and what really speaks to the quality of their real estate selection and their execution on these new builds is the productivity of these new stores.
How are they performing?
Exceptionally well, according to the sources. New to industry stores that they built between 2021 and 2023 have been averaging fuel volumes nearly 20% higher than the overall network average in 2023.
20% higher, so the new ones are much busier.
Significantly busier, yeah. This strongly suggests they are picking the right locations, likely high traffic spots, and building the right formats, those larger stores that attract more customers.
Good validation for their strategy.
Absolutely. And that raise and rebuild program we talked about, also showing incredibly strong results. Those modernized stores, where they replace an old kiosk with a new 1,400 square foot store, are seeing volume uplifts of approximately 27% for both fuel and merchandise compared to the network average.
Wow, 27% lift just from upgrading the building.
Seems like it. These figures aren't just abstract numbers. They really suggest that the company's capital, their investment dollars, are being deployed into high-return projects. They're fundamentally upgrading their asset base in a way that drives superior financial returns. This isn't just growth for growth's sake. It's smart, targeted, capital-efficient growth designed to maximize profitability per location.
Okay, that paints a pretty positive picture on growth and profitability improvements. But let's talk about the recent headwinds. Specifically, that period from roughly 2022 through early 2024, it was marked by some significant macroeconomic volatility, wasn't it?
Absolutely, a roller coaster.
We saw sharp swings in commodity prices, especially oil and gas, persistent high inflation hitting consumers, and a really challenging labor market with shortages and wage pressures. These factors had a profound kind of multifaceted impact on Murphy USA's operating environment, really tested their resilience.
Yeah, big time.
First, let's look at that fuel price volatility and the resulting margin dynamics. Retail gasoline prices, as we all remember, hit multi-year highs back in 2022. Then they moderated somewhat. What's crucial here, and maybe counterintuitive, is that Murphy USA's business model actually performs quite well, relatively speaking, in high-price environments.
Right. Why is that again?
Well, think about consumer behavior. When gas prices surge way up, consumers become, as the source puts it, acutely price-sensitive.
Mm.
People start actively shopping around, looking for the cheapest gallon, trying to save every penny.
They hunt for value.
Exactly. And they seek out value-oriented retailers like Murphy USA, known for their low prices. This often leads to significant market share gains for MUSA during periods of high prices. They attract more customers.
Okay, so high prices can actually boost their volume share.
Yes. Conversely, though, as prices fall and the difference between the cheapest and most expensive station shrinks, some of that market share might be given back up. Consumers might become less price sensitive and maybe prioritize the convenience of the closest station over driving an extra block to save only a few cents at Murphy USA.
Makes sense. Less incentive to shop around.
But a key theme coming from MUSA management recently, echoed in the analysis, is this idea of an emerging structural shift toward higher and more resilient retail fuel margins across the entire industry compared to pre-pandemic levels.
So margins are just higher now, generally.
That seems to be the case, and it's often attributed to the rising break-even costs for those smaller, less efficient competitors we talked about, the mom and pops.
Ah, their costs are going up faster.
Right. Inflation hits them hard. Maybe they don't have the supply advantages. These marginal retailers are forced to maintain higher prices on the street just to stay afloat, just to cover their own rising costs. And this dynamic effectively widens the competitive moat for highly efficient, low-cost operators like MUSA.
Because MUSA can still undercut them, but keep a healthier margin than before.
Exactly. It allows MUSA to capture a healthier cents per gallon margin while still maintaining their low price leadership position relative to those struggling competitors. For example, the sources note that in Q1 2024, MUSA reported a total fuel contribution that's essentially their margin of 24.8 cents per gallon.
Okay. Is that high or low historically?
Well, it was down from the absolute peak seen in the prior year, but still indicative of margins that seem structurally higher and more resilient than the levels typically seen before the pandemic disruptions.
Interesting. So the floor for margins might have risen.
That seems to be the argument. This brings us directly to the broader impacts of inflation, costs, and resulting consumer behavior. Multi-decade high inflation presented both a significant headwind and, kind of paradoxically, a bit of a tailwind for Murphy USA.
Okay, how so? Headwind first.
On the cost side, inflation definitely exerted pressure, no question. Store and other operating expenses measured on a per-store basis rose 5.4% in 2024 alone. That was driven primarily by increased labor costs, paying staff more, and higher maintenance costs for stores and equipment.
Everything just costs more.
Yeah. Management has openly acknowledged that these inflationary pressures, especially on wages, are sticky, meaning they've become embedded in the company's structural cost base. They're not likely to just go away quickly, even if overall inflation cools down.
Right. Wages rarely go down.
Exactly. This obviously impacts their ability to maintain that all-important cost advantage over time.
Okay. So that's the headwind. What's the tailwind?
Well, on the consumer side, this very same inflationary environment, the pressure on household budgets, paradoxically reinforced Murphy USA's core value proposition.
Ah, because people needed to save money more than ever.
Precisely. As their CEO, Andrew Clyde, stated during the peak of inflation, something like, consumers need affordable, everyday low prices on goods and services now more than ever. This pressure on family budgets actually drove more customers to actively seek value, directly benefiting MUSA's traffic and potentially their market share, especially at the bump.
So inflation hurt their costs, but helped their traffic.
Kind of a push-pull, yeah. This was apparently evident in their Q1 2024 results, which highlighted the resilience of their core fuel and tobacco categories. These were described as non-discretionary purchases to a growing base of customers who continued to trade down for value. People still needed gas and smokes, and they went where it was cheapest.
Okay. But does that trade down affect in-store sales of other stuff?
That's the potential downside, yeah. While this trend supports volumes in those essential lower-margin categories, it might also indicate that consumers are being more selective with their spending on the higher-margin impulse items inside the store, maybe skipping the extra snack or the fancy coffee as their budgets get tighter. It's a delicate balancing act for them.
Trying to capture value-seeking customers without losing the high-margin sales.
Exactly. And as with so many businesses over the past few years, especially those in retail and services, Murphy USA has faced significant labor market challenges.
It's a tight labor market, yeah.
Characterized by staffing shortages, just finding enough people to work, and persistent wage inflation. Employee-related expenses are frequently cited in their reports as a primary driver of increased operating costs.
Having to pay more to get and keep staff?
Right. To stay competitive and attract and retain talent in this environment, they've simply had to increase wages and probably benefits too. The sources even mention MUSA implementing a special incentive program back in 2022 specifically to address staffing, which contributed to their operating expenses exceeding their initial guidance for that year. It's a constant battle for them finding enough qualified staff and paying them competitively without completely eroding that precious low-cost advantage they work so hard to maintain.
Yeah, tough balancing act for sure. All these recent challenges. Inflation, labor. Mm. But this raises an important, maybe even existential question for the longer term.
Okay.
And it's arguably the single most significant long-term challenge facing not just Murphy USA, but indeed the entire fuel retailing industry.
Let me guess. Electric vehicles.
You got it. The accelerating secular transition toward electric vehicles or EV adoption. While the immediate impact on overall U.S. fuel volumes remains statistically pretty minimal right now.
Still a small percentage of cars on the road.
Right. But the proliferation of EVs represents a fundamental slow-motion threat to the company's core business model, which is, as we spent a lot of time discussing, overwhelmingly built around the sale of gasoline.
Yeah, if people stop buying gas.
What happens? Imagine a future, maybe 15 or 20 years out, where gasoline demand shrinks significantly, maybe by half, maybe more. How does a company whose identity and infrastructure is built around pumping gas survive, let alone thrive? A progressive decline in gasoline demand as EV penetration inevitably increases will erode this core business over time. It's like sand slipping through an hourglass for the traditional fuel business.
Okay, so that's the threat. What's their response? How are they preparing?
Well, Murphy USA's primary strategic response to this massive long-term headwind is, as we've highlighted throughout this conversation, that aggressive pivot toward a much more robust in-store convenience and food service offering.
Using the stores to replace future lost fuel profit.
That's the plan. This isn't just about simple diversification. It's a fundamental reimagining of what their physical locations are. The goal is to evolve their sites from being primarily seen as fuel stops into broader convenience destinations.
Where you go for food or coffee, not just gas.
Exactly. By drastically increasing the contribution of in-store sales, especially high-margin food, to their overall profitability, they aim to make the fuel transaction itself less central to its business model over time. Essentially, making gasoline more of a traditional loss leader, something that gets you there, but the real money is made inside a much more compelling convenience store.
So are they installing EV chargers then? Hedging their bets?
It's important to note, though, that while they are certainly monitoring EV charging trends and they have some pilot programs in place.
Testing the waters.
Right. The sources we reviewed don't indicate that a large-scale, nationwide rollout of EV charging infrastructure is a near-term capital priority for them. Their financial reports don't show huge investments there yet.
So they're not betting heavily on becoming an EV charging company right now?
Not yet, it seems. This suggests their current strategic focus, their main defense against the long-term erosion of gasoline demand, is strengthening their non-fuel business, building up that convenience and food offering. It truly feels like a race against time for MUSA. Can they successfully transform their earnings base, shifting profits from the pump to the store, before EV penetration significantly impacts their core fuel volumes and profits?
Can they change fast enough to stay ahead of this seismic industry-altering shift?
That's the billion-dollar question hanging over them and their competitors.
It's a really interesting strategic gamble, isn't it? They're essentially betting big that the convenience pivot can outrun the EV wave rather than trying to ride the EV wave itself with charging.
It seems to be their primary bet right now, yeah.
Okay, now, let's look at how they manage their money, specifically their capital allocation strategy. How do they decide where to spend their cash?
Right. Murphy USA's management team has been very consistent over the years in articulating a really clear and disciplined framework for how they decide where to put their money.
Mm-hmm.
They actually call it their balanced capital allocation philosophy.
Balanced. Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means they're very systematic about it. They have clear priorities. First and foremost, they use their cash to fund high-return organic growth projects that's building those new, bigger stores and critical business improvement initiatives, like the technology upgrades or the raise and rebuild program.
So reinvesting in the business first.
Reinvesting first, but only in projects they expect to generate good returns. And then once those internal investment needs are fully covered, the remaining cash flow is systematically returned to shareholders.
How do they return it? Dividends?
Buybacks?
Both, but with a very clear emphasis. They have, as the sources state, a strong and demonstrated preference for share repurchases. Buybacks are the main event. And then they have a growing dividend, which plays more of a secondary supporting role.
Okay, let's talk about those share repurchases first. They seem pretty significant for MUSA.
Oh, they're more than significant. They're arguably the most prominent feature of MUSA's entire capital strategy. This isn't just a passive activity they do sometimes. It is truly a central pillar of how they create per share value for their investors. They actively try to shrink the pie so each remaining slice becomes larger and more valuable.
How aggressive have they been?
Incredibly aggressive. Since becoming an independent public company back in 2013, Murphy USA has repurchased more than 50% of its original shares outstanding.
50%? They've bought back half the company.
More than half. Think about that. That's a remarkable, almost unprecedented reduction in its share count for a public company of its size over that time frame.
Wow. What's the impact of that?
The impact is clearly visible right on their financial statements. Their diluted shares, outstanding. The total number of shares used to calculate earnings per share dropped from 45.7 million back in 2014 to just 21.1 million by the end of 2023.
So less than half the shares remain.
Exactly. This massive reduction acts as a powerful amplifier for their earnings per share, EPS growth. It means even if their total net income grows modestly, the earnings per share can grow much faster because the earnings are being divided by significantly fewer shares. It's like a constant built-in tailwind for their EPS numbers.
A financial lever, essentially.
A very powerful one. And management's commitment to this seems unwavering. They continuously get authorization for large new buyback programs. For instance, they announced a new $1.5 billion program in 2023, which is set to be executed by the end of 2028. They even repurchased nearly $87 million worth of their own stock in the first quarter of 2024 alone, showing they're actively using that authorization.
Okay, so buybacks are clearly priority number one for returning cash. What about the dividend? You said it's secondary.
It is, but it's there and it's growing. They initiated a quarterly dividend back in late 2020. And it's been consistently growing since then, albeit off a small base.
Yeah.
For example, they announced a 2.4% increase to 0.42 cents per share per quarter in March 2024.
42 cents a quarter. Okay.
Yeah. But it's definitely positioned as a secondary component of their overall capital return strategy. The payout ratio, the percentage of their earnings paid out as dividends, is typically quite low, often below 10%.
So they keep most of the earnings.
They keep the vast majority. This results in a pretty modest dividend yield for investors, often less than 1%.
So not really an income stock.
Not primarily, no.
Mm.
And this seems intentional. The dividend signals financial stability and discipline, provides a regular, albeit small, cash return to shareholders. But it strategically preserves the vast majority of their free cash flow for what management clearly views as higher impact uses. Funding those organic growth investments in bigger stores and fueling that much more aggressive share repurchase program, which they believe generates better long-term returns for shareholders overall.
Right. They think buying back stock creates more value than paying a bigger dividend.
That seems to be their clear philosophy. And those growth investments they prioritize are captured in their capital expenditures, their CapEx figures.
How much are they spending?
Well, that spending has been on a clear upward trend recently, which aligns with their accelerated growth plans. CapEx increased from $277.5 million in 2021 up to $344.1 million in 2023. And their guidance suggested a further significant increase coming, potentially reaching between $450 million and $500 million in 2025.
So spending significantly more on building and upgrading stores.
Definitely. The allocation of this capital clearly reflects those strategic growth priorities we've been discussing. In 2023, for example, about two-thirds of their CapEx, around $232 million, was dedicated specifically to the construction of brand new company stores.
Building those bigger formats.
Exactly. An additional $51.8 million was invested in what they call sustaining capital. This bucket includes general store improvements, but also funds a crucial raise and rebuild program, turning old kiosks into modern stores.
So the money is flowing directly into store expansion and modernization.
Overwhelmingly, this heavy and clearly increasing investment in growth and modernization underscores management's commitment to expanding their network with those larger, more profitable formats. It directly aligns with their strategic pivot away from just fuel dependency. The CapEx budget is really where the rubber meets the road for executing their transformation strategy.
Okay, so let's try to tie all of that together now. Looking at their overall strategic initiatives and their main growth opportunities, it sounds like they have a multi-pronged approach.
It really is. Several levers they're pulling.
First, obviously, there's that accelerated store expansion and modernization we just talked about. They're stepping up the pace of new builds, targeting up to 50 new stores annually now. And there's a clear focus within that on the larger 2,800 square foot Murphy Express formats that can really accommodate a much broader merchandise and food offering.
Right, building the capacity for the pivot.
And the sources highlight, as you mentioned, the strong performance of these new store cohorts. They're generating significantly higher fuel volumes and presumably higher merchandise sales than the network average. That indicates successful site selection and suggests high returns on these critical growth investments.
Good validation that the strategy is working, at least initially.
Then there's the raise and rebuild program, which isn't just about simple renovation. It's framed as a very capital-efficient way to modernize their existing, often already profitable, locations. Leveraging that existing high traffic from Walmart, but upgrading the store to drive incremental, high-margin merchandise sales. Basically, upgrading prime real estate to generate higher profit per square foot.
Getting more juice out of the squeeze from existing good locations.
Exactly. And then maybe the central pillar of their long-term strategy is, of course, that merchandise and food service strategy itself. The goal is explicitly to diversify merchandise mix.
Move beyond tobacco.
Yes. Deliberately reduce their historical reliance on lower margin tobacco products and aggressively increase sales derived from higher margin categories like beverages, snacks, and most importantly, that prepared food service category.
Where the big margins are.
Right. The Quick Check acquisition was absolutely pivotal here, not just for the stores themselves, but as we said, for providing that best-in-class food service expertise, a proven operating platform, and a ready-made product portfolio they could learn from.
So they didn't have to reinvent the wheel on food service.
Exactly. The ultimate goal seems to be apply those learnings, that Quick Check expertise, across the legacy Murphy USA network to elevate their entire in-store offering over time. And supporting all this is their Murphy Drive Rewards loyalty program.
Ah, yes, the loyalty card.
The sources call it a key enabler for driving traffic, increasing visit frequency, and boosting the average basket size through targeted promotions and personalized offers. Plus, it provides a rich source of customer data they can use to refine their strategies.
Understand what people are buying.
Right. They even recently relaunched Quick Check's own loyalty program to align it more closely with the Murphy Drive Rewards system, showing they're building a cohesive, data-driven approach across the whole company.
Makes sense. And underpinning all this, to support their low-price value proposition while making this complex pivot, they seem relentlessly focused on maintaining that cost leadership position.
Right.
Through technology and productivity investments.
Yeah. How are they doing that?
Well, they have a company-wide initiative called the Store Productivity Excellence Campaign. It's aimed specifically at improving operational efficiency right down at the store level. They're making significant investments in technology and digital capabilities.
Like what kind of tech?
Things to enhance the customer experience, maybe faster checkout or better apps, tools to improve supply chain visibility and inventory management, reducing waste, and systems to further streamline store operations, maybe automating tasks. All of this is aimed squarely at protecting that crucial low-cost advantage, which is increasingly difficult to maintain with rising labor costs and the complexity of adding food service.
Gotcha. Keep the engine running efficiently.
Exactly. And then lastly, circling back to that EV question, alternative fuel services. The transition to EVs is clearly both a massive long-term threat and a potential future opportunity for them. While their primary strategic response today seems to be strengthening their non-fuel business.
Focusing on the store.
Right. They are in the early stages of exploring alternative fuel services. However, as we noted, the available disclosures don't indicate that a large-scale rollout of EV charging infrastructure is a near-term capital allocation priority.
So watch this space, but don't expect charging ports everywhere tomorrow.
That seems to be the message. It's a pragmatic approach, perhaps, recognizing it's an area of uncertainty and a potential avenue for future growth as the market evolves, but not the main focus of their investment capital today. They seem to be playing the long game by focusing on strengthening their existing convenience store business first.
Okay. So after dissecting all of this, the business model, the industry shifts, the finances, the risks, the strategies, what does it all mean for someone looking at this company, perhaps as an investment? Let's try to pull it together. Let's consider their valuation, the key risks again, and ultimately who this company might be suitable for.
Right, the bottom line. From a valuation perspective, Murphy USA stock is often assessed, like many companies, by comparing its current trading multiples, things like price to earnings, PE ratio, or enterprise value to EBITDA.
EBITDA, the standard valuation metrics.
Yeah, comparing those current multiples against its own historical averages, say over the last 5 or 10 years. This helps you gauge if it's currently trading at a premium or a discount relative to its typical range, which often fluctuates based on prevailing fuel margins and overall economic sentiment.
How does it look historically?
Well, perhaps more relevant is the comparison to its peers, particularly its closest competitor in many ways, Casey's General Stores. NUSO has historically tended to trade at a valuation multiple that is often at a discount compared to Casey's.
Okay, why the discount to Casey's?
The market often attributes this discount primarily to Casey's significantly higher merchandise gross margin, which, as we know, is driven by their wildly successful prepared food business, especially pizza. That food service heavy profit stream is generally viewed by investors as being more stable and perhaps of higher quality compared to MUSA's more fuel-dependent profit stream, which, as we've seen, can be much more volatile due to commodity prices.
So the market prefers Casey's more predictable food-driven earnings.
That's often the argument for the valuation gap, yes. However, a compelling counter-argument can definitely be made for MUSA deserving a better valuation.
What's the bull case for MUSA's valuation?
Well, you could point to Murphy USA's potentially superior capital efficiency. The data sometimes shows a higher return on invested capital, ROIC, for MUSA, which essentially tells you how good they are at turning their investments into actual profit.
Getting more bang for their buck.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's their incredibly aggressive and consistent share repurchase program, which mechanically drives faster earnings per share growth than Casey's might achieve organically. So arguably, that faster EPS growth could warrant a higher valuation multiple.
So it's a debate. Higher quality earnings at Casey's versus maybe better capital efficiency and buyback-fueled growth at MUSA.
Precisely. The valuation differential really reflects the market's ongoing debate, weighing these different strengths and weaknesses. And given Murphy USA's strong and consistent ability to generate cash, another metric worth watching is the free cash flow yield.
Free cash flow relative to market price.
Right. A high FCF yield indicates that the company is generating substantial cash relative to its market valuation. Cash that it can then powerfully use for those growth investments, paying down debt, or critically for MUSA, funding those massive shareholder returns through buybacks and dividends. For a company like MUSA, where capital returns are such a central part of the investment thesis, the SCF yield is a crucial indicator of its capacity to sustain those programs long term. It's essentially the health of the cash engine that fuels their shareholder value creation strategy.
That helps paint a clearer picture, definitely highlighting the strategic choices and how they impact market perception and valuation. But of course, no investment is without risk. We've touched on many, but let's quickly summarize the key risks to really consider here, especially if you're looking long-term.
Absolutely essential to keep these in mind.
The most significant, most immediate risk, the one everyone points to first, is undoubtedly that Walmart dependency.
The concentration risk, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their deep reliance on Walmart for a huge chunk of their customer traffic means any adverse change in that relationship. Walmart switching partners, Walmart competing directly, or even just Walmart's own store traffic declining significantly due to e-commerce could potentially have a severe and immediate negative impact on Murphy USA's business. It's a foundational risk you can't ignore.
Mm-hmm. Can't diversify away from that easily.
Then there's the fuel margin volatility we discussed. Murphy USA's earnings are just inherently highly sensitive to those cents per gallon fuel gross margins. And those margins are influenced by this complex interplay of global crude oil prices, wholesale gasoline prices, regional supply and demand dynamics, and just fierce local competition.
Lots of moving parts they don't control.
Exactly. And while margins seem to be structurally higher now than in the past, a return to a more competitive, lower margin environment, which could certainly happen, would significantly compress their profitability. This inherent volatility makes their quarterly earnings difficult to predict and can lead to pretty big swings in the company's stock price, making it less suitable for investors seeking smooth, stable returns.
That certainly adds lumpiness to the earnings.
And of course, we have to reiterate the big, looming, long-term threat, the secular headwinds from EV adoption. The accelerating transition away from internal combustion engines is, as the sources rightly state, a fundamental and potentially existential threat to their core business over the very long term.
The elephant in the room.
Yeah. A progressive decline in overall gasoline demand will inevitably erode their core business over time, potentially leading to declining volumes and profitability at the pump. The ultimate pace and scale of this transition remain a significant uncertainty, but the success of their convenience pivot is absolutely paramount to mitigating this massive risk long term.
Their main defense strategy.
They're also not entirely immune to broader economic sensitivity. While fuel and tobacco are relatively non-discretionary people still buy them in recessions, a significant economic downturn could pressure consumer spending on the higher margin impulse items inside the store. And reduced vehicle miles traveled during recessions would obviously impact fuel volumes too.
So recessions can still hurt, especially the profitable parts.
Right. And finally, let's not forget, it's just an intensely competitive industry. They face giants like Couche-Tard, strong regional players like Casey's focused on food, and literally thousands upon thousands of independent operators fighting for the same customers. This relentless competitive pressure limits their pricing power and necessitates ongoing investment in store upkeep, technology, and promotions just to maintain market share. It's not an easy business.
No free lunch in convenience retail.
Definitely not. Despite those significant risks, though, it's worth taking a moment to consider the quality of the management team and the corporate governance structure. That's often a critical factor in how well a company navigates these kinds of challenges.
Absolutely. Execution matters.
How does MUSA stack up there?
Well, Murphy USA is led by a pretty long-tenured and experienced management team. The CEO, R. Andrew Clyde, has been in the top job since the company spun off back in 2013.
So over a decade of consistent leadership.
Yeah, that provides stability. And their strategic vision, as we've discussed, has been remarkably clear and consistent throughout that period. Leverage the unique Walmart relationship, maintain rigorous cost leadership, execute that disciplined pivot toward a more robust convenience and food service offering, and adhere to that balanced capital allocation framework.
They stick to their plan.
They seem to. And their decision, particularly Clyde's decision early on, to consistently and aggressively repurchase shares has been a primary driver of value creation for shareholders, demonstrating a clear commitment to that specific investment philosophy. The QuickChek acquisition also stands out as a significant strategic bet that underscores their long-term vision and their willingness to take bold, transformative steps when needed.
So management gets decent marks for strategy and execution.
Generally, the sources seem to view management positively, yeah. In terms of corporate governance, the oversight structure, their board of directors is composed of individuals with deep and relevant experience across key areas like retail, finance, and the energy sector. The bios include former executives from major relevant companies like 7-Eleven and Applebee's.
So people who understand the business.
Right. This breadth of experience should provide strong oversight and valuable strategic guidance. They also appear to adhere to standard corporate governance practices, including maintaining a majority independent board and having separate roles for the chairman and the CEO, which generally promotes healthy checks and balances between management and the board.
Good governance basics are in place.
Seems so. And importantly, executive compensation structures appear to be clearly aligned with company performance metrics, which helps incentivize management to focus on delivering results that benefit shareholders.
Okay, so management and governance seem like relative strengths. Now let's bring it all home. After this deep dive, Who is Murphy USA really for? And perhaps more importantly, who is it not for as a potential investment?
Good final question. Based on everything we've discussed, the strategy, the risks, the capital allocation Murphy USA would likely be most attractive to investors who have a long-term investment horizon.
Patience is required.
Yes. And specifically, investors who prioritize companies with a demonstrated track record of shareholder-friendly capital allocation, especially via buybacks. This includes investors who might follow a growth at a reasonable price, or GARP, strategy looking for solid companies that are growing earnings steadily but aren't trading at excessively high valuations.
Finding growth without overpaying.
Right. Or investors who focus specifically on shareholder yield strategies, which look at the combined return from both dividends and those aggressive share buybacks. MUSA screens very well on that metric. Its consistent free cash flow generation and disciplined approach to reinvestment and returns would certainly appeal to that type of investor profile, especially given the remarkable history of shrinking their share count over the last decade.
Okay, so GARP investors, shareholder yield investors, long-term holders, who should probably steer clear?
Well, the stock would likely be less suitable for investors seeking low volatility. Given the inherent fluctuations and unpredictability in the fuel business and its impact on quarterly earnings, MUS's stock price could be quite choppy.
Not for the faint of heart.
Probably not. It would also be less suitable for investors who are highly risk-averse regarding the long-term secular decline of gasoline consumption due to the rise of electric vehicles. If that fundamental existential threat of EVs replacing gas cars genuinely keeps you up at night, then owning a company still heavily reliant on gasoline sales today, even one trying to pivot, might just be too uncomfortable.
Makes sense. If you believe EVs will take over rapidly, this might not be the stock for you.
Exactly. It depends heavily on your view of the pace of that transition and MUSA's ability to successfully navigate it.
Well, we hope this deep dive gave all of you listening some serious aha moments, maybe a new perspective on a company you might interact with almost every single day without thinking twice.
Yeah, there's a lot under the hood.
There really is. Murphy USA is clearly a company deeply anchored in its past, especially that unique, powerful, yet risky Walmart partnership. But it's also very aggressively building or trying to build for its future, trying to execute this major pivot from a fuel-dominant model to becoming a true convenience-driven powerhouse. And that Walmart relationship, it truly is both a massive blessing and a substantial, ever-present risk.
And maybe if we connect this to the bigger picture, just for a final thought, the story of Murphy USA isn't just about one single company. It's really a fascinating microcosm of the broader energy transition happening all around us.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how traditional businesses, especially those tied to fossil fuels, must fundamentally reimagine their core value proposition if they want to survive and potentially thrive in a changing world. It's a live case study in corporate reinvention playing out right now.
That's a great way to frame it.
So the question for us, as informed observers watching this unfold, isn't just if Murphy USA will succeed in their ambitious pivot. It's also about how rapidly the entire convenience store industry will evolve its very definition of convenience beyond just the gas pump.
What does convenience mean in 2030 or 2040?
Exactly. What does that mean for the next time you pull into any convenience store anywhere? Will you increasingly see a fresh food destination, maybe a package pickup spot, EV charging, or still just primarily a gas station with some snacks? And based on our discussion today, what do you think will be the next big profit engine for this entire industry now that we understand just how critical merchandise, especially food service, has become? It's something to ponder.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.